Hey, what's going on, everybody? Nate here. We did another Facebook Live interview today. That is going to be this podcast right here. But before, as always, I am going to jump in and get all of the announcements out of the way in the beginning. You might think that I sound a little different. That's because I do, probably. I have a new microphone that I'm using. So we had some complaints in the past with the acoustics of the room, whether that be clicking of the mouse or the keyboard or anything like that, or even the air conditioner coming on and cats meowing in the background. And that was because I was using a dynamic mic in the past, and I have upgraded to a condenser microphone. So hopefully this will be a much better microphone going forward. This has been basically possible because of the Patreon support. So I know that I've been kind of hounding on this one a lot for the last 2 months, but that is because we are doing the giveaway for the new Patreons as well as the old Patreons to the podcast. Today is the last day that you can still get entered into that drawing to win a Q-Tech Propel, two McDermott packs, and a Jeanette Lee signed cue ball. So if you want to try to win that, you better hope that you're tuning into this podcast right away. And you can head over to Patreon and get signed up at patreon.com/queueitup. We had a few more people that joined this week in the past few days, so I want to give a huge shout out to Andrew Luther, Jeffrey Rosala. Oh, I think I already got those two, but congrats. Well, you get a second one. Awesome. So the new ones that I haven't given a shout out to yet, Neil Soloway, Ben Brady, and Giovanni Del Angel. Not totally sure the proper pronunciation of that. So thank you, Gio, Ben, and Neil. You guys are awesome, and I guess this is probably going to be the last update for that because I believe that by the time that this gets out to you guys, it'll be too late for you to sign up. Of course, you could still sign up for the Patreon as well. I mean, like I said, this microphone, I'm able to do upgrades to the podcast because of that support. It's always going to go towards making the show better, and we really, really do appreciate it. Even if you want to sign up for the Patreon, obviously after this entire giveaway, you still obviously can, and it's going to continue to make the show better. So we appreciate anybody who has signed up for that or anybody who will in the future. But we had a pretty good turnout. Now, I do want to go into what we're going to be talking about next. So what I'm trying to do basically is make the podcast more financially sustainable in the future. I'm just going to be straight up real with you guys from here. Without doing those virtual events anymore, it's very, very difficult to promote pool full time anymore. So what I'm trying to do is create more sustainability out of the podcast. Step one is the Patreon. So trying to add to that. Step two is going to be, which is going to begin on July 1st, is going to be to grow the podcast as much as we possibly can. Now, I don't want to make the Patreon a community effort because I think that that has to be more of an individualized basis type of mentality. If you have the ability to support the podcast and you want to do it, I think it's awesome and I thank you guys very much for doing it. It's not a requirement by any stretch of the imagination. The podcast is going to be free. It's just whether or not you want to support the future of the podcast going forward. So this I want to make very, very much a community-based effort. And so I want to set a goal as a group, as a community, and let's see if we can reach it. And we're going to base our prizes off of whether we actually do. We're going to be giving away lots of stuff this month as well. But let's see if we can reach some goals. So the most listens the podcast has ever had in a single month is 8,832, the most amount of times we've ever been listened to in a single month. My goal, if we could get this, so the idea is we're trying to aggressively expand and try to get new listeners this month. If we could get that up to, let's say, 15,000, it's almost twice as much as we've ever had. It's going to take a huge community-based effort to be able to do this. If we can get this up to 15,000, for all of the people in the community who help us to grow that, so these are people who are sharing the podcast. These are people who are going to be, sharing the podcast episodes, sharing the podcast itself. You can always go to our page and just click the share button on the page itself. And sharing on Reddit, AZ Billiards, Twitch, wherever you actually are frequenting, as far as I know, there's like Discords and stuff like that. We want to aggressively expand and see if we can get that up to about 15,000 downloads. If we can do that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take everybody in that community who made it happen, and I'm going to send them something for free. Whether it's going to be a t-shirt, whether it's going to be a patch, whether it's going to be a signed cue ball, you're going to get something for free just for doing it. Even if I have to send out 300 free t-shirts, whatever, don't care. If we can do this as a community, then I will be tracking these things, and I will actually find out who has done the most amount of effort to make this happen, and I will be sending you something for free based off of how much you've actually contributed to the success of this project. I will also be giving you guys shout outs along the way, saying, you know, hey, thank you very much, Larry Roizen, today for participating in the chat, sharing it, and, sharing the podcast page in the last week, right? Because Larry has done that. So this would be an example of how I'm going to, kind of give you guys shout outs for really making it happen along the way. This is going to be the biggest help for the people who, yeah, it's a podcast, whatever, I enjoy listening to it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to join the Patreon or to participate in live chats, or, I just want my podcast fix and leave me alone about all the other stuff. Just make the product, I'll listen to it, whatever. Those people, continue enjoying the podcast, it's no problem. The people who are like, well, yeah, maybe I would do more, but I'm not really looking at, financially supporting, or I don't really want to tune in at the same time every week, but I do want to help the podcast, I do want to see it grow, stuff like this is for those people to really band together for 1 month or longer. Of course you can always do it longer, but let's band together for 1 month and let's see what we can do as far as expanding the reach of the podcast in hopefully a bunch of different directions. And let's see what we can do as far as really getting it out there into our local communities, our local groups across the internet spectrum. So like I said, a few Discord, Reddit, AZ Billiards, there's a bunch of forums out there where there's a lot of aggressive areas to expand into. I'm going to be doing this stuff, of course, on my end as well, because I don't share the podcast nearly as much as I should. So, I'm going to be participating in this. Let's get out there to as many places as we possibly can. Now, what does this actually look like? Well, obviously, if you're going to share it to like a Reddit or AZ Billiards or something like that, I won't be able to see it, right? Part of this is just kind of, helping out where you can. But if you're going to do it on Facebook or on Instagram or on Twitter or anything like that, tag me. Tag me, tag the podcast. We have all of those Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We even have an AZ Billiards account. I don't know how to tag on, or even if you can, on AZ Billiards. I'm not very familiar with it. I need to learn it. But we even have a Reddit. So tag us. Let us know. I'm going to be keeping track of whoever in this community helps us, and that's how I'm going to be doing these things. But even if you don't, even if there's no way to tag me on a Discord, obviously there's no way to tag me. I don't even know what Discord is or how to use it. But regardless, take a snapshot. Send it to the podcast page. Send it to me. I want this to be a community-based effort, and I'm going to be updating the page with those that are helping out the most along the way. So please, please, please make it easy for me to find out who you are so that I can keep track of the work that you're doing to help us grow. It will be worth it in the long run. You will get prizes guaranteed as long as you make sure that I know that you're sharing these things. This is going to need to be a community-based effort. I cannot do this on my own. You cannot do this on your own. We are all going to have to come together and work together if we're going to succeed at getting this goal. And like I said, some people don't want to do it. That's fine. I completely understand. Just continue listening to the podcast at your leisure. But for the people who want to really help the podcast and band together as a community to try to reach this goal, we're going to need everybody. We're going to have to work together to be able to get to this point. So the next month, please help us to expand out, if you would, and let's see what we can do with the podcast, and let's see what we can create out of this. Of course, everybody's goal is to grow the game. This is my way of doing it. Is it the best way? No. Is it the way that I do it? Yes. So if you're obviously, if you're tuning in on this, you at least would like to think that you appreciate the podcast and that you enjoy getting your news and information this way. So let's see how many else are out there that we could reach in the next month. And of course, you're going to get free stuff out of it. So cool. Awesome. All right. Well, with that, let's get jumping into the podcast. Again, thank you so much for all the people who have joined the Patreon. And please, going forward, help us grow the podcast by sharing it, sharing podcasts, sharing the page itself. Give a little bit of a recommendation. Don't just like share it and, you know, be done with it. Give a little bit of a description. Say like, hey, check out this pool podcast if you're a pool fan. They talk about everything that's going on, blah, 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 blah. A personal endorsement goes a long way towards getting somebody to actually take a chance on something and try it. And who knows, maybe I'll give bonus points for people who put endorsements on there as well. So I guess with that, let's get started with today's episode.
I'm a real deal. I shoot your liver out, hand it to you.
Live. What an easy game this is. What an easy game this is. So, Mike, you what you spent the last like 2 weeks making jump cues?
Yeah, basically. I left. We finished up a batch of 40. We just needed the final sand. Went to Oklahoma. Got like some sinus infection. Went back home for like 4 days. In Oklahoma, I spent like a day at the hotel when I should have been at Shane and Dennis. Pretty brutal. And then get back home for like 4 days. Turn right back around. I'm back up here in Austin. So, yeah, it's been an adventure.
And how long does that batch of 40 jump cues last before they're all sold?
They're already gone. Actually, this last time, so all 40 are gone. And then when I came up here last Thursday, I think, it was supposed to be to finish up everything. And then we ended up making 10 more, and all but like 3 are sold. Gone and shit. So, yeah.
Sounds like you're ready to start up another process of them, huh?
We order material. I'll be back probably after Big Dogs in July. I'll be gone over there for probably a week, and then when I get back, I'll probably be back at Henshoes because we're going to be gearing up for the Texas Open. I have a whole bunch of stuff for that, and then when I talked to Ozzy yesterday, we might end up going to Vegas and get a booth, but it's still up in the air. But if we do, I'm gonna need another like 30 or 40 jump cues for that too. So I don't know. It's a lot, man.
September for the BCA.
Yeah. And it's so last minute, man. I hate planning out stuff last minute. It drives me nuts. So
yeah.
But it's gonna be the biggest event, I think. I mean, you went to VNEA right in Vegas, so
I'll be going to both. Yeah, I'll be back out again and for BCA too. In September.
I think it's gonna be massive, man. You get all the league players and everyone's been
it's huge. Yeah. I've been to it several times. I think I've been to it twice in the last 5 years, and every single Q company is there, all the apparel companies are there. It's all of like the Omegas type of places are there. I mean, there's probably 50 to 100 vendors minimum. I mean, it's huge, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think Ozzy said they were gonna have like 60 or so, which is still great. And they have a real nice setup, man. Everything's on the side, and then all the bar boxes in the middle. The whole thing is just, it's top shelf, man. And then they go and pair it along with the pro event. So I always enjoy going out there, but I don't know. We'll see. I may just end up piggybacking off of somebody else's, off of their booth, and then just set up shop and then like prorate and just pay for a few days for them. So we'll figure it out. We'll balance it out.
Yeah, that was the exact thing I was going to do to your booth. Sweet queued up swag out there.
If we do it, I'm in, man. You know, so I still got to build displays, all kinds of stuff. This is all brand new to me. I'm used to just showing up and trying to like just take like 10 or 15,000 and just try to buy cues and take them home and sell them. This is different.
So, Demetrius, you had a little bit of a run last weekend for the tournament in Virginia. If people did not check out the podcast, you ended up 5th through 8th. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Great, man.
And a couple pretty good scalps along the way.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I think that I had some highs and lows. I played some good sets. I played some pretty bad sets. But that's pool, man. That's pool. So, you know, it's – what do you do?
Was the final 16 single elimination? Did I
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I never liked that format, man.
Well, they kind of – you know, they were really going for a pro style, and they really mirrored it off what Matchroom's been doing. And it went pretty well, but then it's like what happens is the draw – means even more in a single elimination than it does in double elimination. So, like, look what, I don't know, they ended up posting that video for Tyler Steyer and James Aranis. So Tyler's playing really good. He drew James first round of the single elim, and that's just hard, man. I mean, it's like he goes hill-hill, and James made the hero shot, the best hero shot I've seen since Efren Z-kick. On the, he hooked himself on the four ball and just made this amazing mass A shot. Anyway, the point is, it's like Tyler.
Send me the link.
They've posted it up there. We'll if I can't link it in the video for this, I'll put it in the comments. But they posted it now. And it's pretty amazing. So the point, though, is like for Tyler, I mean, Tyler was playing good enough to get to the final four in that thing or finals in that thing or even win the thing. But he drew the hardest player of the tournament first round to the single limb, and then he ends up doing worse than me, you know? So tough format.
What is that? Jesus, Dodong. Tyler,
Alex Pygaline.
Yeah, but Alex don't have a big 10 ball break.
No.
Yeah. Soucy was breaking extremely well too. He broke really, really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so good run out there. But I did a podcast on that, published it yesterday, so there's a lot more detail for anybody that's interested in hearing the live sweat on not the live sweat, but the sweat on how Josh and I did out there. We talked about it in a little bit more detail. But yeah, it was a good tournament, man, and just kinda getting back to it now.
My buddy Bashir talks about you a lot, man. I'm sure you
Who's that?
Bashir.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's coming over to my place tonight. We're going to probably hit some balls.
Nice, man. Tell him I said hello. Yeah, he's always
I will.
Saying real good things about you, buddy.
Oh, cool.
He must have you wrong. Must have been confused for somebody else to make sure.
Yeah.
He must have been hitting the sauce that night.
That's right.
All good. Well, we're going to be discussing some pool today, but if you're tuning in right away, please give the stream a share. Help us get it out there so we can talk some pool and get everybody else filled in. There's Larry right there. What a guy.
Is that the link?
He's got the link for us. Yeah, I think he's got the link for us. So, I mean, I could show this. I mean,
you should just pull it up right now. We don't have to watch the whole rack.
I can do that. Yeah, I can do that.
Do that. Pull it up right now. Let's just watch that the one shoddy shot.
What is this? The one you were talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me get this. Let me get this real quick.
So Molina, Mike, I'll tell you what. I was going to call you Molina Mike, but Mike, I'll tell you what. I had James in the Calcutta, so I was in.
Sorry, my dogs are. Yeah. Hey, we had a fight, buddy. Go ahead. I'll put myself on mute for a second.
I had James in the Calcutta for 2,600, and he was a single limb. If he doesn't get out here, I'm out. And instead, he ends up winning this rack and won the tournament. So it was like a $7,000 swing based on this the way this played out. And
sweat is delight.
So that's what. So when you look at where he put himself, so brutal. Oh man.
I'm trying this link out. It doesn't seem to be active. Let me try one more time. Zero.
What was the payout
Larry, can you send that to me via private chat, please?
It was 7,000 for first.
For Calcutta or for tournament?
For the Calcutta. Tournament was 6,000. Nice. Yeah.
Nice. Did he get half himself?
No, he didn't. So.
Oh, even better. Well, you got to still throw some jelly though.
Yeah. We did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. But Dodong's a real good, like, his 10-ball break, when he's in gear, Dodong's 10-ball break is world-class.
He was breaking world-class. I mean, like, really. Like top,
when he played against Omar in Dallas, like, when the last bar box, I think it was, or maybe whenever it was Tony and Chip, but right around that same time, he played Omar, big table 10-ball, and the night before, off-stream, he had played Dennis, a race of 13, smoked him, like, something like 13-3, and got his break cue stolen. The next morning, plays James in some action. I think they were playing for like 8,000 or so. But anyway, Dodong's break was like Fedor, Chang. I mean, you every elite Tim, and he's got that kind of break. You know,
he. I'll tell you what, his break has gotten better in the last year since he played filler. He's He looks so relaxed. So there's less muscle than most top players. He looks like he's breaking softer, but he's actually hitting harder than he used to. And I'm telling you, he was exploding the rack, planting the cue ball, and getting like snappy action, making 3-4 balls a break. I think if he rematched Filler, I know this is silly, but if he rematched Filler, he's gotten better in the last year. That's all I'm saying.
It's not James's abilities, because James has the ability, and we talked about this before, me and him. Like, it's all mental with him. Like, he should have smoked Kevin Chiang whenever he goes and beats him, and he was ahead every night or every set they went and played. Didn't they play like a best of
big too
or something like that? He was up big every time. Yeah, whenever he's like, I don't know what it is, when it's late, he starts feeling the heat a little bit. But like with growth, he'll go and get there and be able to overcome those kind of demons.
Yeah. Nate and I were talking about this a year and a half ago. We were saying, you know, once he breaks through, he's going to start winning everything. And he won, he got to the finals of Turning Stone against Shane a year and a half ago. And then did he win that diamond tournament, or he won something? And then here we go. Okay, so he just hooks himself. Now he is basically frozen to the 7-ball. And what he decides to do, Mike, is he actually has to aim to the left of the 8-ball and then curve it. And in order to curve and cut the 4, you need the curve to take effect right away, which means you have to aim to like the second diamond on the side rail and then have it hit it so soft that it goes like 3 inches and then hooks immediately.
Does he hit to the left with right, and then it comes inside and then back out wide?
So from here, it doesn't look like much. But if you saw where he actually had to aim that thing, he had to aim that thing to the left of the 8-ball, and then do like a sweeping curve.
Yeah.
Can you?
I was hoping they'd show a replay of it from the side.
No, they didn't.
They probably don't have it. Right.
Just go back to right there. So we can see. You can see he has to aim towards the left of the 8. And so.
That's a pretty incredible shot.
Hill, he hooked himself.
I would have already been burning my money. I would have been so much on tilt thinking that there goes that 7,000 chance right there. And then
I'm telling you, man.
Here's the shot he hooked himself on it with.
Oh, my God.
The shot that he hooked himself on it with was a little bit silly, too. I mean,
he overcuts it
all the way up table.
He overcuts it. This ball doesn't have to fall. It hits the side rail going in. This ball hit the side rail point. I was watching because I'm sitting on the table to the back left staring at him right here. I saw that 3-ball going into the side rail. I didn't think this ball was falling on that table.
Check this out.
And because he overcuts it, the cue ball runs too far because it has too much speed on it.
Right.
Oh, yeah, it barely falls.
The whole world to get to, and you land on that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Pool is such a brutal game, man.
But take a look at this. I didn't think the scratch was ever in play. But if he undercuts this ball, he's actually scratching there, I think. Look how close he came to the scratch.
Demetrius said it right, though. It's because he caught it too thin, so it picked up too much speed.
But if he hits this ball a little bit thicker, he might actually end up scratching on it.
Yeah, for sure it's a touchy shot. He can come off the 7. He can get behind the 7. He can come up short and be so thin that he can't make the 4. I mean, this is definitely not the shot, you know. And the funny part is to get there, he had to make a jump shot to get there. So it's like.
But don't you want to get down on that lower half of the table? That way there's no room?
You can come off the 7 and scratch or run into the side. Yeah. So anyway, that was when they showed it from the side view, it just looked like a little swerve. But when you saw it from behind him, you could see how much he had to aim to the left. And then he had to hit it super soft so that the curve took right away. So he had to get up and elevate and soft, that's a beautiful shot, man. At least,
That's a $7,000 swing, huh? That's pretty good. But, you know, he was one of the favorites. I think Jesus has got that kind of gear, too. Jesus' 10-ball break is amazing, and I think Carlos undersells him a lot to go and try to find him action. But Jesus is an elite player. He's got world champion pedigree. He's got world champion potential there.
Jesse, I was there with Jesse. Jesse had half of James at the Calcutta. He told me that he played Jesus, and he said, and I, of course, I've played Jesus and lost to him before. But anyway, he said that Jesus is playing so strong, and he's, of course, he's breaking just as good, and he's playing so strong. He thinks he's playing not as good as Aranis, but he thinks he's playing 800 speed Fargo, you know. He thinks he's playing 800. And his Fargo rate's only like 750, but he's like, no, he's playing like 800 level. And he's probably like where, kind of like where James was a couple of years ago before his seasoning. And so he thinks that like for the next year, before people catch on to Jesus, we gotta be buying that guy in the Calcuttas. Yeah.
He'll definitely give you value. But you mentioned earlier when it comes to James's 10 ball break, like how fluid it is and how effortless it looks, but yet he still gets power in that pop and squat. Jesus has got that same kind of, that same whip. You know, where it just, it, his timing is just perfect. It's not forced, you know, it's beautiful to go and watch. It really is, man. That kid, he's got such a high ceiling, like all those guys. I mean, Tyler, Jesus, all these guys have really high gears. And I'm not just saying that, but it's in 10 ball though. You know, I mean, any rotation, I guess, but mainly 10 ball. Cause it's just that they got that break just down.
Well, Jesus is, he was banking and everything. He was shooting and he's been playing. He's got a lot of, you know, there's kind of like, there's the players that play kind of, they just play the table and they're not really, they're more methodical. Like, I mean, Tyler's more methodical and that's how like Alex plays. But then there's guys like Jesus where you feel like he's more of an attacking, like he's coming at you. He's got fire. He's got like, he's, I'm not saying he's like.
When you're young, you're fearless, right? You don't let it get the best of you because you think you can go and drill everything, no?
Yeah, he plays with a lot of aggression. You know, he plays with a lot of aggression, which, I mean, I'm not saying it's a better style, but he's definitely, he definitely is coming at his opponent. He's definitely a competitor, man. He's very fierce.
You sure?
Yeah.
Carlos got a good one there with him.
Yeah, he does. There's few players that you can look at and be like, this guy's got every avenue of the game that you need to be a world champion. And
he jumps as good as Fedor.
Yeah. The biggest thing with those players like that is you could have all the talent in the world, but you know, at the end of the day, like you got to have that you can see Roberto Gomez when he gets up into those biggest matches, and not trying to dog on, you know, Roberto, he's a great dude, but he donkeys it. Right. I mean, every time he gets up there and he actually looked good in the world championship this year. He looked good in the world championship. I mean, he ended up losing to Albin, but Albin ran over him at the end of the day. I mean, it was a close match, and Albin just got there. I mean, it was time to turn it on, and Albin did, right? So, but you don't
Roberto
see that.
Roberto can find those spots. Like the same way James found getting up on that seven ball, Roberto can do the same thing. Roland Garcia can do the same thing. They can just, when the moment's there, they can find ways to go and dog it. But it's funny. I mean, Roberto can get over it, but it's just sometimes like, man, what are you doing?
Well, he's running out of time. At the end of the day, he's running out of time fast.
Well,
so
yeah, but he's brand new on Matchroom stage. Well, I mean, like this on this time anyway.
Yeah, this iteration of Matchroom. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. So
yeah. So I guess let's finish out the discussion on that tournament that you were at. This was the TTMD.
Congratulations, Demetrius.
Sure. Yeah, thank you.
I'm not exactly sure what that stands for. Demetrius, do you know?
You know what? It's I had it yesterday. I pulled up their website, TTMD Billiard Streaming. It's I can't recall. Something tech something. I'm sorry. I don't remember.
Okay. So James Aranis ends up going on and actually, you know, winning the event from there. He was pushed by Jesus, it looks like. 11-10, he won two Hill matches in a single elimination. Race to 11. That's brutal.
Well,
that is mentally drooling.
Well, I don't think Jesus got to the hill against him.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Well, I was watching live.
Maybe the swelling was off then.
I was sweating it live. He didn't get to the hill. No.
Okay. So that's maybe just an incorrect.
Yeah, that's not right. He had a Jesus, like, I want to say he kind of got away. I mean, it might have been 11-6, it might have been 11-8, but it wasn't close enough. I'll put it this way. I had 7 G's on it, and I wasn't sweating, so I knew it wasn't.
I believe Demetrius. When you got that kind of money riding on
you
him,
sold me.
Hey, I'm sweating. I'm watching every ball.
I was screaming at the TV. I was watching the live stream once he got that late. And then when he played Alex, he was down 4-2 against Alex. He won 10 out of 11 games to go up 12-5, and then he won 13-6. So, I mean, he was breaking so well that he ran out all of his racks, and Alex was breaking, like, kind of ineffectively. alternate the break. Alternate. So Alex, so
huge. I like that even better, man.
Yeah, once I saw that Alex was not like breaking like James. I mean, he's kind of, you know how it is at that level. It's like if you can't break as well as him, you're kind of drawn dead unless he dogs it to you.
Massive. Yeah, massive, man. Huge.
Yep. So, James Aranis ends up winning over Alex 13-5 in the finals. I guess that's not really a surprise to me. As far as, I mean, Alex had a great run to get there. Alex really didn't play anybody he was supposed to lose to, except for maybe Warren Kiyomko.
Well, didn't he play Tyler? He beat Tyler, I think, on the to get into the final 16.
Yeah, yeah. I'm only talking about the final 16.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
So,
Hey, Fedor's here.
Who?
Is that, didn't Fedor just jump in?
Or is never that? Heard of him.
Man.
Never That's heard evil. Of him. Yeah, what's going on, Fedor? I guess Alex, Shane Wolford, that's a 11-4, Jeremy Soucy, 11-4, Alex is still, a top player, but, this had a lot of really, really, Dimitri really said it, great.
It's all about the break. Yeah, he ain't got a 10 ball break like those guys, Tyler's the biggest feather on his cap when it comes to beating guys who have an elite 10 ball break, in my opinion. And I mean, Warren can get there every now and then, like you said, but what James did really. When you go through that kind of – when you go through those guys to get there and win, that's going to go and build up his confidence going forward for the rest of the year. So if he stays here, I think James might have gone back home to the Philippines.
All right. The third, fourth, it's single elimination. So Jeremy Soucy and Jesus Intencio, fifth through eighth. Demetrius, why don't you give fifth through eighth, at least the two that you remember?
Well, I know it's – so it's me, Jesse Engel, who was there with me, who had a good set. He beat Rodney on the hill, and he beat Earl. He played well to get there. And then I know Shane Wolford got fifth through eighth. And then there was one amateur at top amateur. Was it Kyle? Who was the other fifth through eighth?
Yeah, Kyle Dilley.
Yeah. He was considered the top amateur.
Fargo.
So that's good, yeah.
Pretty good. Yep. And then I guess the rest of the players, because actually the 9th through 16th is actually pretty stacked as well. You had Hunter Lombardo in there, Joey Korsiak, one of New York's best players. Who else we got in here? Logan Harrington, Warren Kiyomko, Rodney Morris, Brandon Schuff, Rick Scarlato, and Tyler Steyer. I mean, how tough of a 9th through 16th is that? That's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
It's the cream rising up.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great tournament for a lot of those players. I guess let's talk about the Efren Reyes challenge. They did as well. BJ Usiri ends up getting first place in that one. Rolando Garcia gets second. Not totally sure the format on this event.
It was
just a standard double elimination, it looks like. Trying to find where Efren actually finished up, because I know he played in it. Where is he? Where are you at, Efren? Efren did not have a great tournament in this. Looks like.
I mean, he's getting up there in age, man. You know, this is the
He is. What? Is, how old is Efren now? About 60.
This is I've been at home for a year, and I need to go and get a paycheck kind of tour.
Yeah. Right.
God bless him, y'all.
Well, I mean, with how much he's done for this industry, why not take a 25-year farewell tour?
Oh, great, yeah. I'll still pay to go see him. I don't care.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, who in the industry could actually do this at this point, you think? Besides Efren, of course.
Nobody.
Jeanette Lee? Think. Jeanette Lee, I would say.
Yeah, you know, Jeanette, maybe, yeah. Yeah, Jeanette could. Earl couldn't, I don't think.
No, I don't think at this point. I mean, no. I don't think Earl would be able to psychologically, because you got to be... I mean, what's his farewell tour endured? Like, just going around and yelling at people in the crowd for drinking a beer while he shoots?
It's like, and if I'm a room owner, I don't know if I want to take that risk, you know?
Well, he could.
I know with Efren, he's going to go and play. He's going to go and be polite. He's going to go and sign everything. Earl might just go on a rant and take off after an hour.
That's the whole twist of the farewell tour. He'll show up to play an exhibition, and then he'll have the ref kick out all the audience and say farewell to them. They all think they're saying farewell to Earl. They got it all wrong.
We got you.
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. I know he came up and did not a charity event, but an exhibition against Johnny at the Mad Apple in Wisconsin. And he ended up beating Johnny. Johnny was up big. I think they played a race at 21. I want to say Johnny was up like 13-4 and like 17-8 or something like that. And Earl ended up coming back and winning and beating him like 21-19 or something like that. But I mean, he spent in an exhibition, he spent 40% of his time just yelling at this group of drunk guys on the bar, basically. And just,
that's just him. Like, ever got the chance to go and see Earl, that's just who he is. First time I ever met him was in South Dakota, and we're at some bar owner's basement while they're signing memorabilia, and he's going off, like, and there's not a camera inside. That's just how he's wired, man. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
So I guess Earl's not getting a farewell tour is what we're deciding.
Well, I wonder, you know, I've got a question, guys. Is it possible that you could set it up to where, you know, because right now I think the problem is Earl wants to win, of course, but he doesn't have to win, so he can let his demons get the best of him sometimes and be like, it doesn't matter, whatever. But like, is there a way that there could either be enough money or enough prestige to where he needed it so bad that he could own his own demons, and just even when he felt like exploding that he would hold it together? Like, is there a way to put enough, you know, back him into a big enough corner to where he would have to just find a way to get through and play his way out of it? Or do you think that it'll just never matter to him enough again? There's no way to ever make that happen.
Well, don't you think that's what you try to, like, isn't that what you pay for when you try to go see Earl? Like, you hope he goes off. You know, like, you wanna go in, and as a fan, you wanna go in and see what you've seen on TV, I think.
Part of going to NASCAR is waiting for the crash, right?
That's fair.
Bingo. Yep.
But just for Earl's sake, I wonder if there's ever a way that he could get into a spot where when he was having a meltdown, he was like, no, I can't afford to have this meltdown right now because I need to win. Yeah, maybe not. I'm talking fantasy land. I think maybe Pixar could do an animation, but I don't think that's happening in real life.
But it'd be odd to go and see Earl like real stoic, like an Albin on TV or like a Fedor on TV, where he's just kind of just quiet and just turning red. You know, I don't. It wouldn't be the same experience.
Yeah, there's a big difference between like showing some emotion and showing some character without the silly stuff that he does, right? I mean, somebody dropped their chalk on, you know, the other side of the county, and he's doing a backflip with anger, right? I mean, it's like there's a difference between kind of the antics and you know, kind of the overboard part of it. And you know, for whatever you want to say about Earl, I mean, he's authentic. I mean, he is his own man.
For sure. It's no matter where you see him, he's going to be himself.
But you know that, I mean, Matchroom's done with it. I mean, Matchroom's seen that, you know, that he'll never get invited to another Matchroom event ever again. You know, at some point in time, is he kind of wearing himself thin on the global market? And for Matchroom, he did. Which is unfortunate, because, I mean, still to this day, I mean,
he's made for TV, though, I think. I still think he's made for TV. And he can play sporty nine ball. Like, he was in Turning Stone a year or two ago, where he goes and beats Jason.
He's still a top 15 U.S. player, probably.
Yeah. And it's all about the game, you know. Nine ball, I think he can still go and run out. Yeah. Plus, he exercises a lot. So, I mean, you know, he's there for the most part.
For the most part. So I guess this entire discussion started with, you know, who besides Efren in the world could go do one of these farewell tours? Jeanette Lee and
Kiss.
Efren.
The band Kiss. That's it.
The band Kiss, yeah. Yeah, their 75-year farewell tour.
Yeah.
That just keeps growing every week. Demetrius, you think if there's any more? What do you think?
You know, I mean, it's hard, you know. I mean, maybe Alex at some point, you know, maybe he could pull it off just because he had a pretty good following based on his personality and his performance. But you know, I don't know. I think that Efren's kind of one of a kind, and that's why everybody in the world just wants a chance to shake his hand while he's still around.
Yeah, I think I just heard Mike. Did I just hear that your dog wants six on the wire for a grand taking Sky?
I don't know. If I'm taking it, I don't think I would take six. I think I need a little bit more to take Sky. But, no, yeah, she's seeing someone here. This is the kind of dedication I have, man. I'm pulling over and using Wi-Fi from the city to go on and do this.
Well, I as a genuine, authentic pool player, I can understand the dog's barking. I know what he's saying. He's saying he needs six on the wire.
I like 11 better. How about that?
I thought that was Donnie in the background, but it's, you said it was your dog. Is that right? All good fun. All good fun. So I guess, yeah, those were the two big events that happened in the last week. Nothing else was on my radar as far as going on really in Europe or in the U.S. Mike, was there anything else that you know that happened that's worth mentioning? There was Alex Pagulayan, and there was always the Alex Pagulayan and the Reyes Gomez matchup. But I mean, that, I don't know, that yeah. That pool is so
personally
disgusting,
man.
For me. Like, I can't watch it. I mean, it's interesting for about the first three games, and then afterwards it's just like, all right, I'm going to go, I don't know, shove a spoon in my eye for a while. Just can't do it.
I don't want to watch a guy get steamrolled. And I like moving games because I love one pocket, but that thing is just – it's just different. And that – and just the antics and the, like, barking in the room, and I don't know, man. I'm over it. You know, I'm not a fan of it neither.
Now you mentioned one pocket. Where's all the one pocket action been lately? I haven't seen any good one pocket. It's been we haven't really seen a good one pocket match.
The dogs agree. They want to. They're trying to get some Alex and Dennis.
Chip and Scott, you heard it here first. Chip and Scott, they're working on it. It's close.
Yeah,
real close. Sounds like
Dennis and Alex is very close too.
That would be insane.
Yeah, they got to go and iron out some stuff, but. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it'll happen this year. But Chip and Scott, and then probably Chip and Corey, and it'll be for like six figures. So it'll be big.
That's what I heard as well. But the Scott one's first.
It's smarter for Chip to go and play Scott first. I think.
I'm telling you what, man. Scott's playing some great pool right now. I don't know if it is.
Playing great in Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean he might lose to him.
It's gambling. I mean, I'm sure each side likes their bet, you know. I mean, he gave Tony hell whenever he was coming off a fishing boat, you know. And now he went deep in at Buffalo's. And Scott looked sharp. Like, I watched a lot of his matches, especially because he ended up going deep. So his match with Justin Hall, I don't know if y'all saw it. If y'all didn't, I mean, it was one of the best one-pocket battles I've seen in a long time. I think the sport's better when Scott Frost is in gear and engaged.
I agree. Yep. He's entertaining, if nothing else. Mike's got a train going through. That's awesome. Bobby Garza says they had a pro-am tour in Florida. Who ended up winning that, Bobby? Was that the one that Donnie won? I think Donnie won a tournament.
I think it was Maglino, I thought. I thought Maglino steamrolled.
He's playing good, man.
Yeah. Okay.
Donnie's
playing.
No, I was saying Anthony Maglino's playing. Yeah, he's playing good. Playing good one pocket too. I'll tell you, he's going to be. I think he's going to be in the mix when we start talking about top one pocket players pretty quick.
Well, Kyle Bova out of Florida played pretty good. I forgot which event. I know they had an event in Florida that he went deep in, and then he played the U.S. Open one pocket, and he gave Tony all he could handle. You know, I mean, short races, anything can go and happen. Anybody can go and play decent, but. I didn't know Maglino played one pocket like that.
Yeah, he plays good. Who do you like if Dennis and Alex did end up playing?
I don't know. Alex looked terrible in Buffalo's. I mean,
he's like, been looking bad for a while in those events.
Just awful. And I'm trying to say it like with as much respect as I can, but it's not the same Alex that it was pre-COVID. You know, and I think that everybody that I talk to anyway. When we go and split hairs, says that Alex moves better, but if his cue ball is as bad as it was at Buffalo's, I like Dennis. You know, so
I like Dennis huge. If his cue ball's like that, I mean, Alex's shine is that he can get that cue ball in between a ball's length of the rail and another ball with like crazy accuracy. If he can't even like get that same level of safety, he's got no chance.
Well, I think about it, you know, a couple of years ago, I can't remember if it was 3 years ago or what it was, but when Dennis lost that, I know it was like three or four years ago when Dennis lost to Tony that race to 40, and, you know, Dennis was still learning the game, and Alex played Tony and beat him pretty good, playing like best you know, raises to 10 or something, best 3 out of 5, I forget. Yeah. But anyway, so, I mean, at that point, Alex was still pretty sharp on top of his game. He was kind of considered the man to beat in one pocket, and Dennis was kind of learning the game. I think at that point it would have been a good match. Now Alex, he's not quite as sharp, and he's not quite as dialed in and hungry, and he's not quite as confident. And meanwhile, Dennis is not only confident playing one pocket. I mean, he's beating Shane back-to-back sets, playing nine ball. He's playing, and he knows the game better. So he's got his winning mind engaged. He's got the right mindset. He's got the right confidence. He's got the right striking to where he's playing the best nine ball in the world. And he's learned the game. I don't really know how you can really bet against Dennis right now.
It'll be massive. It'll be but before Dennis
there might be 700,000 on Dennis, that.
Oh, there I might think be. It'd be I, wow.
There might be
a million for sure.
Yeah, they're like million. Seriously, the money behind Dennis. The moment Dennis says he's ready for that game, his backers will unload the truck on it.
Wow.
If Dennis didn't look that great before he played Shane, on 4.5 he looked real good. I mean, really, really good. His pocketing was on point like it had been before. But before then, he didn't. I'm curious. Like, if it's a tight table, I think it makes it a whole lot closer. But I don't think they'll play on 4.5. But if it is a generous table, I for sure like Dennis a lot better because his pocketing is just killer.
What would you like to see as far as format? If you could wave a wand, I mean, if they're going to play for, let's just say they're playing for 700,000, like, you don't really want to see one set, right? Like, how, or would you? I mean, how do you think is the best format
like that
for that kind of match?
I like Alex and Tony. Alex and Tony, that best of five or whatever it was, because you're never buried. Like, if you play just one straight set, if let's say he goes up and gets up eight games one day and then wins 4 games the next day, he's up by 12 games going into the third day. That's tough
there's
to
no
go
reason and
watch.
To watch it. Yeah,
but if you go and have for. Races to 10, You start fresh. You're always back in. It's a brand new quarter, you know, brand new. So
this is one thing I really think. Yeah, I agree with that entirely. This is one thing I really think Poole gets wrong is these big matchups. And I get that you're trying to do them in between events where you're traveling all over the place. And, you know, we can get together. We have a guest. You can get together, right, and say, hey, all right, so I'm going to be in Texas this weekend, and then I'm going to New York. Let's meet in Virginia and play this match this weekend. Like, I get the idea that there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to making these schedules. But I really honestly believe that as somebody who's kind of, like, done a little bit of promotion in the game now, you're missing out on the opportunity to really actually make these events, like, 5 days, each day have 3 hours of action, right? So do a race to 8, do a race to 10, like you said, Mike. Something that's going to take between 3 and 5 hours so that you're not sitting down at any given time for 12 hours of pool. Market it that way to where every day's fresh, every day means something. It's going to be 5 days, and it's going to be 5 hours of pool. You can actually sit down and digest that all in one sitting, and it actually means something to show up every single day.
Well, that's how the World Series. Yeah, the World Series in baseball. You got best of 7. You know, it's every game is 2 to 4 hours, 3 to 4 hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but
every other sport doesn't.
Diehards will stay through. Like I like it for rotation because for me, rotation can burn me out, man. Like when I'm seeing Dennis go and break the ball the same way and a lot of the same layouts, and I know he's gonna get out. I know it's like 97% chance he's getting there. That's boring to me, you know. Like if it's over, like when he ran the 10 pack, it was special. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to knock it, but I think the diehard one pocket fans don't mind seeing. Like the grinding games, the down.
Yeah, but those aren't the people that we got to bring into the tent, right? I mean, those are the people that are going to be here no matter what. It's the other.
That's fair. Very fair.
But we're talking about two different things. You're talking about what's going to be best for the audience. I'm talking about what's going to be best as far as determining the better player. Like if what this was all about is let's find out once and for all who the best of the world is at one pocket, what's the right format to really, you know, sort that out? And I think that,
I agree
with
Mike.
What do you think, Demetrius? What do you think, buddy?
Yeah, I like what you're saying. I mean, I think that either a series of shorter sets or just one long ahead set where they play 15 ahead for all of it. I mean,
I like that.
But either way,
we might be there for a month.
You might be there for a race of 15. You might be 15 ahead. You might be there for a year.
But the thing about it is that you never know. Like even if the guy gets 13 ahead, you just never. Can really know until it's over. Whereas with the set, even if you play a race to 3 sets to 10, if one guy's up 2 sets and then you know he's up like 4-1 the third set, yeah, it's not over, but like, you know, you could feel like, well, you can start calculating how much would have to go wrong for him. Whereas when a guy's 13 ahead or 14 ahead, if it's been, let's say they've played for 3 days to get there, and the first guy was up 6 games one day, and then the other guy got ahead 8 games the second day, and now the first guy that was behind the second day, now he's up 13 games the third day, you might feel like he's only 2 games away, but you also know he's only a couple mistakes away from the other guy running it all the way back. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that's the right format. I'm okay with the I think that in terms of like pay-per-view and setting aside time to play, it's more reasonable to say let's play a set of, you know, races to 10. And I think that for a match, if they end up betting $500,000 to $1 million, or if that's the total amount invested, I don't even think it's out of the question to say, you know, whoever wins 5 races to 10 first. I mean, I don't think there's any reason not to make this take a week, you know, but I'm not the one playing.
It'll be one of the biggest matches of all time.
That's because right.
I think it's the premier matchup in pool, and I wish it was like Demetrius said a couple of years ago
when they. I got to push back on like you there. I still think Josh and Shane would be better as far as premier.
I think that would have been better 2 years ago too. That would have been better 2 years ago too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. You're right, Nate. Because that would go and move the needle quite a bit. I mean,
that would
apples and oranges talking like one pocket in rotation, you know. But I think those two guys. And I mean, listen, we learned something. Well, if you didn't know, now you know that you can't ever count Dennis out. Like if Dennis is down 2 sets, he's still in it, you know, and he can go and come back. We saw that a lot. He's got a lot of heart. I'm not saying we haven't seen that from Alex, but we've seen proven over the last, you know, 12 months that Dennis is always going to be in as long as he's down on the ball. You know?
So here's a hybrid of the kind of the two ideas that you guys, what do you guys think about this? Races to 7, one pocket, or 5 to 7, something like that. But 5 ahead in sets.
Ooh, that might take a while.
or 3 ahead in sets.
They can go on grind, man. I've seen them play a lot. They can go on grind. It's not just where they're playing run out pool or selling out. They can go. They have the ability to be like a chameleon, where they can go and change their styles and have many different ways to go and get there, you know. And I don't know. I'm pumped to go and see it.
Two guaranteed sets a day, race to 5, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and 3 ahead in sets or 4 ahead in sets. So you're guaranteed at least 2 days, and you know.
That'd be interesting.
But the undetermined time frame would be hard, right? Because, you know, if they're going to be signed up for a tournament, they might have to do it over, you know, 6 different sessions. And what happens, you know, when you get that much money involved, you don't want to be, all
right,
we both got to go to the Texas Open next week, and we'll just keep the money in the neutral hands till then. I mean,
I think my favorite format would not be I think my favorite format would be races to 10, but instead of doing best of 5 sets, you know, whoever gets the 3 first, I'd like to see it be whoever gets the 5 first. I think that 3, you know, if they both win 2 sets, I'd feel dissatisfied. If one guy eked it out 3 sets to 2, I'd feel like that wasn't enough play. But if they play, if they play 9 sets,
you wouldn't want, listen, this is what I do, right? So like I buy and sell cues. I'm free a lot. I travel all over the country. So it's different for me. I don't mind staying up on a Sunday night, but the average fan can't go and stay up on a Sunday night till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning to go and be that kind of diehard. So if you talk about that kind of format, it's tough to go and get there. If you have, best of 5, let's say it goes Hill. Now you're at 5 days, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If it ends on a Monday, that's tough. That'd be tough.
Well, that's why I think it needs to be more structured, like I said earlier, as far as like make these all 3 hours at a time. You might have to change the format. If you might not be able to play a race to 150
or like
anymore.
Chinese eight ball, right? They got that a Chinese eight ball. They do they'll do a race, but they'll also do it time. So it's like whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The only thing is, I keep coming back to where, I mean, I want fans to watch, but I'm more interested in seeing which of these two guys could win in the most pure contest possible. But I do think that I don't like playing until 3-4 in the morning stuff, because I do think that's an issue when people want to watch. I mean, I think that starting, I don't know why people can't start at like 1 in the afternoon, and that way if somebody's like, well, I'm working, I gotta miss part of it, I'd rather have them miss the first part rather than the last part, you know what I mean? Why don't we have these things wrap it up at 10-11 midnight, and then people that want to watch can all catch it, you know? That's how I think it should be.
Here's kind of a perfect way of transitioning, and here's kind of a perfect way of transitioning this question from Larry into it too. Like, do you guys think that the shot clock should be implemented throughout all matches? I mean, that would
Now I'll tell you something Brandon Schuff talked to me about. So Brandon has some interesting ideas about shot clocks, And he says that this is all coming here. This is his prediction. In the next, like, 2 to 5 years, because the difference is that we have the technology for AI now to be able to do stuff like the chess clocks, to where, you know, if you had, like, 30 seconds a shot plus, like, a 10-minute time bank or a half-hour time bank that you could use whenever you wanted. So whenever your 30 seconds is up, then you start running down your real clock, and then everybody has 30 minutes worth of reserve time. Like, that kind of stuff isn't possible right now, because you need a referee that's really on point, that doesn't make any mistakes, and it's too many refs, too many moving parts. But once you get it so that the AI can tell when the ball stopped rolling and whose turn it is, then it would be really easy to automate. And he thinks that, like, he knows of people that are working on this stuff. He thinks this is coming out in the next 2 to 3 years. And so he had an interesting idea that not only could you do it where you have 30 seconds a clock, 30 seconds a shot, you could do it like 30 seconds a shot plus a time bank. Or,
that's an awesome idea. I love
that. But check this out. He had another idea. He said, what if each person, say you're playing a race to 9-10 ball, each person has an hour on the clock. And then if you run out of time, doesn't matter how many shots, if you're at the table, you might be up 9-1. Or I'm sorry, race to 9. Say you're up like 7-1, but you've used up almost all your time. Once you run out of time, you don't lose, but you just foul every time it's your shot. So the other guy gets ball in hand every shot for the rest of the set. But now the other guy might only have 7 minutes left. And even with ball in hand every shot, he's got to find a way to run 8 racks in 7 minutes. And so he had this whole crazy idea that, like, you're giving up ball in hand at every shot because your clock ran out. And anyway, the point is that there's going to be all kinds of new options of time controls that we never had when we need refs to do it. That's all.
I like the idea, but it's going to be tough if you're talking about gambling. Because when you talk about gambling, you got backers involved. And I tell you, nobody's going to want to go and put Fedor Orin playing 10 ball when they know he's got to go and be on a 20-second shot clock. Dennis takes a long time when he's playing one pocket. If you ever watch him go and shoot, he can take a while to go and get there. And if he's playing for, let's say, big money, like if you're a promoter putting the money in, it's one thing. Because, hey, these are the rules. Come play the game. You don't want to play it, don't play it. But I like the idea of finding new ways to put some heat on their ass, you know, to put that pressure on. Because when you know you got the beeping or whatever, or you know you got 10 seconds, you got, like, people can go and tense up when they know they're running out of time. But when you have that, when you're real comfortable every time, that can be tough. So I think it'll make for some exciting pull. I think there's a good balance, though, Demetrius, for sure there.
I think that's a genius idea for Matchroom. What you get, so instead of the 30-second shot clock, make it a 15-second shot clock, but make your bank per rack 1 minute. So you get 15 seconds per shot, which is, you know, that's about how long it takes to take a standard shot, I would guess. But instead of, you know, the big giant beepings and people screaming out extension, you just basically say, you know, you just continue down on your shot. The beep goes from being really loud and obnoxious to just being very gentle and kind of, hey, this is 3, 2, 1. Now your time clock starts, and then you don't have the players constantly looking over to see what the clock is at. They just know that
they
can play their game.
I just
want to
see John Lehman just go and just grab the ball, like when and nobody knows what's going on. They just said, nope, you're out of time. Just grabs the ball.
Yeah, right.
Guys just know what happened. That's what I want to see. I think that'd be hilarious.
I think that's a genius idea though for Matchroom. I think that's just a 1 minute bank, and then you get 15 seconds per shot. You no longer have to worry about extensions. The players no longer have to ask as to whether or not they have an extension left. Because how often do you see it? How many times did you see it in the World Cup of Pool where, you know, one of the players would take their extension and then the other one didn't take it, so they don't know if they have it or not, and then, you know, they're constantly like, you know, extension, and the ref will say, well, you don't have one left, and then you just see him sprinting around the pool table and taking a shot. I mean, that's not a good look either. I think this could get around a lot of the problems that are with one extension per rack. I think it's a really cool idea.
Yeah, but it'd be hard to get there with the foul. Like, maybe when you go from 30, just say, okay, from here on out, you got 8 seconds. And then that's it.
The foul doesn't have to happen though, right? The idea is every single shot you get 15 seconds. So if you run out of time in your time bank, you just have 15 seconds, and then you're it, right? So
it makes for great rotation TV. Yeah. I think.
If you know that you're out of, you know, the ref will say, you know, you're out of your time, or you have 1 second left in your time bank. And if you use that second and you're now out, it's not an automatic foul, but you still have your 15 seconds per shot. The only thing is once your 15 seconds are done, then it's a foul, right? So every single shot, you should still get 15 seconds. The point is you don't have that bonus time to fall back on. I think it solves a lot of the issues that are, you know, kind of brought up from using a shot clock and, you know, questioning whether or not you still have your extension. Did my partner use it? You know, it's, you know, and then, you know, sometimes you do need more than one extension per rack. I mean, if you're kind of playing a safety battle and you don't want players just sprinting around the pool table trying to
Demetrius, would you want that though? Like if you're in a finals or something?
Well, I think
great pool, so how would you feel about it?
Well, I just think that I would want a little bit longer. I mean, 15 seconds a shot with 1 minute per rack. I still think that's actually less time than they have now, even without an extension, because right now they get 30 seconds a shot on every shot. So if you take that times eight shots, you're talking about that would be the same as a 15 second base with 2 minutes in the bank. So I think I'd rather see a longer bank that lasts for the whole match. And then if you have a, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather see it be everybody has 15 seconds a shot, and then maybe you have a half an hour in your bank for the whole match or whatever, something like that, you know?
So the idea with the 15 seconds is like, if you break two balls in and you're dead perfect on the one ball, it's probably going to take you on average about 15 to 20 seconds per shot, right?
Right.
So you're wasting that 15 seconds on every shot anyways, right? The only difference is when you get yourself in a little bit of trouble, or, you know, you're in kind of a safety battle back and forth where the 15 seconds starts coming into play.
Yeah,
but most shots only take 15 seconds, I would
well,
say.
Well, it depends on the player. You know, so Clint Ikachi, he likes to take – he'll take 15 seconds if it's like a really routine stuff, but otherwise he likes to use his full 30 seconds on anything that's like not hanging in the hole. And I don't mind that. Like, I don't think he plays – like, people can say he plays slow. I think when he's on a shot clock, I don't think he plays slow at all. I think that if somebody wants to take 30 seconds a shot, it's just a matter of what we think is reasonable. And I think that if you limited it to 15 seconds a shot until you started using your bank, I think you start weeding out guys that are more deliberate, like Albin Ocean, Clint Ikachi, Alex Kazakis. I mean, these guys, they're just on a different rhythm.
Put yourself, like, in not – think of it not as a – as the pool player standpoint, but from what's better for TV, like, do you want to go and see Chris Melling go and just fire, or Kelly Fisher go and just fire balls, you know, and have a really good rhythm and pace the entire shot? Or do you want to go and see, you know, Kachi go and walk around and put a point where he wants to be at?
The Justin Bergman where he goes out and dry shoots from 14 different spots?
Hey, you know, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like what Ben Brady just said, if you shoot quick, your time rolls into the next shot. So if you shoot faster than 15 seconds, you could bank up time. That'd be cool too. The other thing, I mean, it's like, if we really want, I don't know. I'm the wrong guy to ask. I'm always going to think of it as a player first. I think that, you know, I think that nobody's ever found a way to get an audience involved. And so to start degenerating the game, to chase a non-existent audience is the last, I'd rather do it backwards. I'd rather say, let's do it what's right for the players. And if you can't do what's right for the players and get an audience, then you're doing it wrong, is my opinion. But if we really wanted to be just chase an audience, then the best thing to do would be have them play the ghost on separate tables. And each person has a time bank. No, listen though. Every time you start with a time bank, every time you make a ball, it takes time off the other guy's clock. And so it's like this race to see if you can detonate the other. I mean, you could do like whatever you wanted to do. Like if you really want a circus.
I like that idea.
See,
yeah, I like that idea though. You can take away from your opponents. I like that. Because
remember when we were playing the VG9 and I had that rack where I was tied with who was I tied with? And we came to like some, or was it the VG9? What was it that I was playing that guy where we had like the race? Whoever we got the break and play the ghost, and whoever pocketed the nine ball first won. So we raced to see who could get to the nine ball. It was sudden death. And I broke and I made like three balls. And so I was running the table, and I knew that he was still at like six balls on the table when I was down to three, so I could kind of take my time. But it was like literally it was a race to see who could pocket the nine ball first. That was actually kind of fun.
That could be entertaining.
Anyway.
Yeah, we just put 20 minutes on the clock, and whoever ran out the most amount of racks in 20 minutes was the winner.
That was funny, yeah.
Yeah, those were interesting. No, I think we're onto something though, as far as that the time bank thing. I mean, you can increase it from 15 seconds to 20 seconds. The point is let's get rid of the extensions completely, because I think that simplifies the game, especially to the viewer, because they don't have to, you know, they don't have to get explained to what an extension is, and you only get to use it once, right? You just have this time bank over here that once you shot. But I think 20 seconds would be a good idea, maybe then, because then you're.
And I really like the idea of being able to increase your bank by taking quicker. Yeah, I like that idea.
I like that a lot.
Well, I think that benefits faster players, and it gives an undue advantage to them.
But there could be strategy with it too, you know.
If they're faster players, they're going to be less bothered by it. They've already got an advantage anyway by the clock, so might as well. I mean. Yeah. I think it's a good idea.
Would have an even better edge.
And it gives it would be fun to see people thinking, oh, this shot's easy. I can pick up some time on the clock, and then they get down on one stroke and into the rail. That would be. I mean,
yeah. I think plus you're gonna. I'm looking at this from like somebody who would actually like code this and make this actually work. That would create. Well, it really actually wouldn't be that much more of an issue, but the graphics would get funny then. Because you got to have these as graphics on the computer screen, right? Or on the TV screen at the end of the day. And if you start with a 1 minute little, almost like a, I don't know, like a timepiece or something like that, and you know, it's going down as you go. What happens if you get an extra 1 minute on top of your 1 minute?
I wouldn't have a clock. I would have like an hourglass with red sand with the Wicked Witch of the West, like in, yeah. You know,
little monkeys flying over.
Yeah. Let's get the drama.
All right, a winner.
So there we go. Well, that was an interesting discussion I wasn't planning on having, but I think it was kind of fun to have it. So I guess let's...
If we'd been on the clock, somebody would have given a ball in hand about 10 minutes ago on that one.
yeah, probably.
No doubt.
So this is what you get around here. This is the great stuff that you get. So let's talk about... let's touch on Shane and Sky. I guess, Mike's, get us started. What are you thinking of it? What are you looking for?
I mean... Everybody knows what kind of like that Shane has such a devastating 10 ball break. I don't think people give enough credit to Sky's 10 ball break. And at the end of it, we know that the bar box,
especially on a bar table,
the bar box is an equalizer, you know. So, I really do think it's gambling. I don't think Shane has that big of an advantage just because of the break. I just don't. The table won't go and affect them because they're both going to go and run out balls. They both go and jump well. They can both go and handle clusters. I think it's just whoever throws the last haymaker is what I think. I do expect it to be close, but it can go in like a 7-12 game lead is nothing. It's absolutely nothing with this kind of format, you know.
Yeah, Demetrius, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean this thing. So. My personal opinion, watching elite players play on bar tables, I think it's not – it just doesn't really do it for me. As cool as it is, I'm just not a big bar table guy. But, you know, on the one hand, I think Sky has proven that he – I think Sky is hungrier than Shane. I think he's going to want it more. I think his – I was so impressed not only with his jumping but his kicking. I think Sky is going to be jumping better than Shane and kicking better than Shane. And I think he's going to be running out as well as Shane, if not better. Like, literally, Sky has been kind of white magic. He's hungry. He's dialed in. I don't think that Shane has a breaking edge. I saw Sky play. But the only thing is Dennis almost got there with him, okay? And Dennis's break is not as good as Shane's. And so despite everything I just said about how good Sky plays, Dennis almost beat him. Dennis broke okay, and he definitely ran some racks. I'm not trying to say he didn't play well, but we know Shane breaks better than Dennis. So if Dennis almost got there with him, I like Sky's end of it, but you just can't rule Shane out because he does break as well as anyone in the world, and he plays as well as anyone in the world. So if he shows up and plays, I mean, of course, to say that Shane can't win is just ridiculous. So I'd give a slight pull to Sky just based on momentum and desire. But I think it's a toss-up, and it's pretty hard to pick.
I want to see Shane's, like, mental game. You know, I want to see. Because he would look broken against Dennis. He looked broken against Dennis at the end. Yeah. He looked broken against Dennis whenever this last time around. Like, if Sky can go and bury him, you never know. Shane may go and just have his head in his hand. You know? And I'm not saying he's weak by any means because –
I mean, but no, you're right.
I think they're both on par for world championship, but it's tough, man.
You're right. If they're both taking turns running 4-6 racks, and you know when Shane runs, you know, 10 racks and 2 innings, Sky's like, yeah, I don't care. Now it's my turn. But then when Sky runs 10 racks and 2 innings, if Shane's getting fatigued by how his lead just went away, or now he has to do this again, and yeah, he's going to probably be the first one to show some fatigue.
I saw Sky whenever him and Dennis were playing, and they're going back and forth. And even whenever Dennis was making big comebacks or making big leads on him or whatever, Sky's demeanor, nothing like Shane's. And I mean nothing. He was laughing. He was still joking, still smiling to people. I mean, you couldn't see it because it was off camera. But then as soon as Dennis dogged it or he didn't break well or whatever the case was, as soon as Sky got a chance, his eyes, man, he just turned into a killer. You just saw it in the way he stalked the table, the way he just – when you see it, you know. And Shane just didn't have it, because whenever Dennis was coming back and burying him or putting him in a big hole or coming back from erasing a big lead, you saw Shane get frustrated. You saw Shane's like whole energy just drop, you know.
Yeah. And I guess the only thing I want to talk about for Demetrius, one of the things that you talked about is, yeah, Shane breaks the balls better than Dennis. And that's true, but I don't think that the bar table really selects for that as much as it does on the big table, right? I mean, the break is significantly more important on the big table than it is on the bar tables. There's going to be, you know, we saw four dry breaks, something like that at the end of Dennis and Shane. Is that right? There was four or six?
Yeah, the only thing is that's nine ball with the cut break and the nine of the spot. I it's weird. I think that I actually am surprised to hear you say that. I think the break means more playing bar table 10 ball than big table 10 ball because, you know, think about it. If everyone always runs out when they get a shot.
This is my point. Okay. This is exactly what I'm getting to is the point is just getting to the table, right? That's exactly it. So it comes down to who's going to shoot the ball straighter. And I don't think that you can make any argument in the world right now, at least, that Shane shoots the ball straighter than Dennis. There's just no way. Right. So if the break means less in a matter of just getting to the table with the opportunity, I think it selects out even more for who shoots the balls the straightest. And I think that actually gives an even bigger advantage to Sky. Now we've been like so bad at picking these matches for like the last like 4 months as like on this podcast.
Well, Demetrius picked Dennis.
I picked Dennis.
Yeah. But you were wrong the previous like three, because you had said on that podcast that like I've gotten the last like three wrong. I'm gonna go with Dennis, and I know I've gotten at least the last two wrong, maybe even three. So like we're getting really bad at it. But I think we're all in agreement here. I think Sky, because Sky is. Dennis kept it close, but I think he kept it close because the break doesn't mean all that much. You're going to get a shot, so it's who's going to shoot the balls the straightest. And I think Sky has an advantage there.
Hey, well, boy, I got to take off because my girl's coming back from being outside in the park. Nope. So
no problem, Mike.
I hate to do it, man, but I got to go and run, you guys.
You're all good.
Hey, it was a pleasure
Thanks for
having
joining
Mike.
Us, Mike.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Take care.
The one thing I'd say about Sky, you know, we've been wrong in a couple, but there's been a couple where we were really, really confident. And then there's a couple where we were like, yeah, it's a toss up. And I think I was right on Dennis over Shane, but I'll admit I wasn't like betting a ton of money on Dennis. I was like, yeah, I like his end of it, but I'm not like trying to empty on him. Same thing with the match before when they played. I like Shane, but I wasn't going to empty on it. So the matches, I'll just, in our defense, I want to say two things. One, we've differentiated when we really want to empty on a match versus when we just have a pull. This match here, Sky against Shane, you know, we're going to bet, you know, you and I are going to bet Sky.
Yeah.
And by the way, I got a little bit more than what I told you about last night on Sky. So So the point is like, we're betting.
That's me
on
being
it.
Excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it now. So we're going to call this one a close one. The ones that we really felt the most strongly about were like Alex versus Tony Chohan playing one pocket, or Josh Filler playing Aranis playing 10 ball, or, you know, Bergman playing Mora playing 10 ball. Like, there's certain matches where we're like, yeah, this guy is like a heavy favorite. Lately, there's been some really tough matches, but all I can say is we differentiate this one. I think we agree that this one's a tougher one to call. The other thing is, I should at least say there's more variance. You know what I mean? This is not real predictable. The only thing I can say in our defense besides that is we started a little joint bankroll, and we're not behind. So we win sometimes, right?
We're comfortably in the green. I kind of get what you're saying, but I can't apply that to me for the Shane and Dennis, because I honestly felt Shane was going to win that, and I thought he was going to win it big. So I would love to take credit for what you're saying, but that was not describing me. I thought Shane was going to win that easily. I honestly did. I mean, It's flat out wrong. I mean, when I called Chip over Tony in the one pocket, I straight up said on air, like, I'm not even using my head in one single entity. Like, I had no idea. The point is, I was burnt by Chip so many damn times that it didn't matter to me, right? I refuse to lose more money on betting against Chip. That's the only reason I picked Tony, and I said that. But no, I think we're all on the same page here. I think Sky, I think it's narrow. I don't think it has to be. You know, I did an interview with Sky yesterday, which I'm kind of deciding as to whether or not I'm going to release on the podcast or not. But Sky picked 150 to 125. He feels confident. He feels good. I mean, you don't take the match on if you don't feel good, right? I mean, it's silly to say, oh, I think I'm going to lose by 15, right? I mean, of course you're going to have confidence going into it. But Sky feels good. I mean, he said in the interview multiple times he feels really good. He thinks he can win by 25.
Yeah, and what happens with matches like this, it kind of reminds me, I don't know if who knows this or remembers this, but there was a time when Shane, this might have been, you know, 10, 12 years ago, when Shane played Donnie Mills in Florida on Donnie's home table, and they were playing nine ball, rack your own. And I don't remember if
Donnie won that. He wasn't in Florida, though. That was in Turning Stone.
Well, we're talking about a different match. Donnie, rack your own. And I think I don't think he got the breaks. Did he get the breaks or he got some kind of weird spot? I don't think Shane would have given up the breaks. But Donnie got some kind of a spot. I don't remember what it was. All I know is that Donnie got to rack his own ball. Maybe it was just an even up race to 100, but they were playing rack your own nine ball. And Donnie's like, I think on my home table, rack your own nine ball, I can beat him. What happens, and Donnie almost did, I think he broke in a ball. He broke in the corner ball like 72 out of 73 times or something like that. And what happened was, and Shane had to kind of get a little fortunate to win. Donnie kind of dogged it to him at the end because it did come down the stretch and the pressure got to Donnie. Donnie had the opportunity to win. When it comes to a bar table match like this, Sky's not confident because he thinks he plays better than Shane, where it's like, Shane, I'm going to run out better than you. Like, I'm going to set up a run where I run out and you're going to dog it because I'm me and you're you. Like, that's not what he's saying. Sky is just simply saying, I think I could break and run 150 tables of bar table 10 ball so fast that it doesn't matter how good this guy plays. I just break and run so many racks playing bar table 10 ball that I think I could do that in, you know, 26 innings, where I think Shane's going to take more than that, you know, because as good as he plays, he's just not going to run as many racks as I'm going to run because I've got this thing solved. I think so. He's not really betting against Shane. He's just betting that he could close this thing out in a very short order.
Yeah.
No, I used to wonder, like, how could anyone feel confident betting against Shane? But it's not, you're not really betting that you're going to outplay them. You're just betting that they're not going to shoot.
Yeah. No, I think that could be it. I mean, it makes sense to me. That's kind of how I felt that he was talking to me yesterday during that interview. So, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more in depth next week. I'm actually going to be on site for it. So we'll probably have to do the podcast next week from Oklahoma, which, bummer, I guess. I think it's going to be awesome, right?
That sounds okay with me. Isn't that there? Yeah, no. Okay.
Oh, I see what you did there, because Oklahoma. Yeah.
Isn't it okay? Isn't that their?
They're a thinker. No, it's OA.
Oh, well, then that doesn't work then.
No, it's okay. But if you say anything with enough confidence, I mean, people will believe you, I guess.
That's right.
As evidence. OA is Oregon. It's not Oregon either. Did you believe that?
I tuned out. Just like a lot of our viewers did. Yeah, okay. We got anything else?
I guess that's pretty much it. I wanted to have a discussion on what makes a good pool fan, but I think we can push that off for a little bit later. I think that's fine. I will say really quickly, and I'm going to put this plug in the beginning too, but for the people who are here right now, I am giving away a Q-Tech Propel for the Patreons of the podcast. So if you're interested in becoming a Patreon to the podcast, basically what it is it's the financials, or it's the financial thing that, so this right here is a new microphone. We had some people complaining about some of the audio, especially in my room, as far as the acoustics. I'm right below a air conditioner. And when that kicks on, it can be kind of distracting. The typing of the keyboard, as you can see right here, it should be significant. Ooh. Yeah.
I didn't hear a thing. That's awesome.
Yeah. So there should be, it should be significantly better as far as the, this is a condenser mic. The other one was a dynamic mic. So the dynamic mics are basically designed to pick up all sounds around it. The condenser mics are designed to only pick up the things that are directly in front of it, which can be changed a little bit with the gain. So this is a brand new microphone. The Patreon support allows us to do these things. So basically there is a link on the Facebook page. There basically you can give as little as $5 a month, or you can go all the way up to crazy amounts, whatever you really want. But the point is it's this future of the podcast to allow us to continue innovating and doing these shows. Plus, you know, you get some pretty cool perks along the way. So today is the last day that you can get entered into this drawing for the Q-Tech Propel, as well as two McDermott packs, which you can see right there. Those purple things right there in the back of my room. Those are two McDermott packets. They have jerseys in it. So each one has different stuff in it. It's about 70 to $100 worth of stuff in each one of them. There's like a glove. I know there's a jersey. There's some T-shirts. There's some tip tools, stuff like that. There are two packs with about $100 each. And then we're also giving away a Jeanette Lee signed cue ball. So lots of prizes. Today is the last day to get entered into that. I'm probably going to do that drawing either probably Friday. Friday is when I'll probably do that drawing. So if you want to get entered into winning all of that stuff and helping the future of the show, the link on Facebook, or just go to patreon.com/queueitup. And you can get signed up if you would like to. But that's really the last thing I want to get out of the way. I'm going to be putting that in the beginning of the show as well. But for the people who are on Facebook right now who won't be watching or listening to the podcast because you listen to it here, I wanted to get that out there for everybody. So, Demetrius, unless you have anything else that you want to plug or talk about.
No, I'm good, man. I appreciate it. It's been good catching up, and I can't wait till the Sky match kicks off next week. We'll hear you in the box and check it out.
Yeah, should be fun. And congratulations again on your tournament in Virginia. That's a pretty good finish for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week, probably Tuesday morning, either Tuesday morning, and we'll do it from where I'm from, Wisconsin, or we'll do it on Wednesday, and I'll do it from Oklahoma, one of the two. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and see you next week. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Queue It Up podcast.